This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening and welcome to The Informer. Dean Beck with you tonight. We will head over to South Africa, where the world's largest HIV conference is taking place. The International AIDS Society's AIDS 2016 is currently in Durban, South Africa. We'll speak to Mark S. King and the Executive Director of Living Positive Victoria, Brent Allen. Two years ago, AIDS 2014 here in Melbourne was a big wake-up call to the HIV sector here, and as is tradition, we had our own little protest. Well, the first plenary session at AIDS 2016 in Durban, South Africa, was met with this. Criminalisation is still a big issue right around the world regarding HIV. Mark S. King joins us live from Durban, South Africa. He was one of those protesters on stage at the opening plenary. Mark, welcome and thanks for joining us on The Informer.
Thank you so much, Dean. It's great to talk to you again.
Now, Mark, it is tradition that these conferences are given a bit of a shake-up with a protest. Why criminalisation? Here in Melbourne, it was the cost of medications, if I recall correctly.
That's correct. Well, I think that the criminalisation movement has grown exponentially just in the last few years because we can't stop HIV if we continue to stigmatize and criminalize people who are living with the virus. And there are now stories, heartbreaking stories, from around the world of people who have been prosecuted because a partner said, oh, they didn't tell me they were positive, even when the person used a condom or they were undetectable and therefore posed no risk to the person. We are starting to really get fascist about who's positive and who's not, because we now live in a world in which people like me, who are HIV positive and undetectable, we now know I pose no risk to anyone. There was a study released here at the conference just days before the conference saying definitively that of all of these hundreds of couples that they followed who were positive and negative and not always using condoms, there was not a single infection from the positive to the negative partner if that positive partner was on treatment and undetectable. So if we know that to be true, why are we putting people in jail who pose no risk to anyone else? I could go on and on. It's just a huge issue, because if you're that afraid of these sorts of prosecutions, why would you get tested? Why would you seek treatment and be transparent about your HIV status? I spoke to a nurse from Uganda. She's HIV positive, and she pricked her finger when she was treating a patient. She didn't touch the patient. She pricked her own finger, and so she changed the needle before, you know, serving the patient. Mm-hmm. Well, the patient saw this and freaked out and called the cops. That woman was prosecuted, this poor nurse, and put into jail for months while she was being prosecuted over whether or not she posed a risk to that patient. Those are the realities we are having to face right now, and that is why HIV criminalization has got to stop if we want to stop the spread of HIV.
We had a huge success here in this state, the host state of AIDS 2014, regarding criminalisation with the repeal of 19A, our HIV-specific law that at the time criminalised people with HIV. Now, the fact in the US regarding servicemen who are HIV positive, I know you spoke to somebody there at the conference who was a serviceman, and the discrimination that they experienced is extraordinary.
Oh, it's such a terrible case of a man who has served our country with such distinction, Lieutenant Colonel Ken Pakela, from the Army, was falsely accused by a supposed sex partner of not disclosing his status. And so the military prosecuted him and ended up kicking him out, even though there was never any evidence that he ever had sex with this guy. Ken says they never did. And the only witness recanted his story. So there was no case at all, but the military would not back down. They would not reverse because of all of this HIV and homophobia. So as a result, Ken Pinkella is no longer serving our country for no legitimate reason whatsoever.
Well, joining you on stage was some grandkids of Elizabeth Taylor, who's done tremendous her work in this area and helping those with HIV continues to this day. Let's take a listen to what they had to say when they were on stage protesting the criminalisation around the world of HIV.
I think it's great to be a part, even if a small part, of a movement like this, and I think most importantly to be able to participate in the discourse about how criminalisation is such a backwards idea and counterproductive to the fight of HIV and AIDS.
I'm glad that people are really coming together to take action on criminal justice systems that are supposed to protect people, but inadvertently, because of backward and bad laws, actually provide unjust discrimination.
So this is going to be a focus of ours for the next time, next year or more, however long it takes. So whatever we can do to get the word out and to change people's minds so we can end criminalization of HIV.
I think it really needs to be pushed out there and really spoken about in a loud and vigorous way, because it really is a violation of so many human rights.
And we can never complete our mission of seeing an AIDS-free generation and world without ending criminalization laws first.
That was the head of the Elizabeth Taylor Foundation ending Mark S. King's catch up with the grandkids of Elizabeth Taylor. Mark, they were joining you.
Aren't they inspirational?
Oh, absolutely.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, here you have the grandchildren of this iconic actress and AIDS activist. And first of all of them got a little bit of her looks. They are a beautiful bunch of young adults, let me tell you. We're turning heads throughout the conference, even when people had no idea who they were. But they did not show up just for star power. They were actually at the criminalization pre-conference, sitting there with everyone else, taking notes, being really engaged. And as a result, the Elizabeth Taylor AIDS Foundation has made criminalization their number one issue. And so kudos to them, both the children and the organization, for really getting behind this.
I gather that they're very active with the foundation and continue her good work today.
Yes, yes.
Now, Mark, the issue regarding sex workers and injecting drug users is one that continues to pop up in the conversation. What is being done with that regards internationally? Because I know in the places like Russia, it is just not even acknowledged, and therefore they have a tragic situation with HIV at present.
Well, it's interesting. You look at countries in which sex work is more acknowledged and even respected in terms of the fact that these are men and women who are making a living, who are trying to protect themselves, and in many cases are the frontline educators who are educating their own clients about HIV prevention. But there are two groups here. By and large, this conference feels as if sex work should not be criminalized. And I've met a lot of sex workers who are very dedicated to HIV prevention. And then there's also a contingent here, smaller, of physicians who are against sex workers or against sex work and prostitution and all of that, and feel as if it is harming our efforts and harming HIV prevention. They are in the minority. It is a provocative topic worldwide, certainly, because we all have hang-ups about sex in general. But as these sex workers will tell you, sex is work. And they deserve to be respected. They deserve to make a living. And they deserve to have access to HIV prevention and to condoms. Of course, there are places in the world where if a sex worker is found with condoms on them, they're arrested because that is seen as being proof that they're a sex worker. So it is an issue, especially provincial Americans like me have a hard time wrapping our heads around. But the fact is that sex workers need to be respected, and their role in HIV prevention should be acknowledged.
Well, people like me have a hard time getting our heads around the fact that PrEP isn't available in New Zealand and the UK. What conversation is being had in South Africa at the AIDS 2016 conference regarding PrEP?
Well, obviously, people in the United Kingdom are extremely frustrated and disheartened and are actually suing their health administration over access to PrEP.
I wondered when that would happen.
Well, they're suing them now, and we're hopeful about that. In the meantime, certainly gay men are ordering PrEP online through India, where it is being made, where the patent does not exist for Truvada, the drug, and so they're able to manufacture it as a generic, and it's perfectly safe, and people are accessing it that way. But this is known as the PrEP conference by many people. Everyone sees now that the science is solid, that this is a tool that is going to turn the corner on the AIDS epidemic as long as we can all get access to it. And absolutely, this is a foregone conclusion now that we have the tools in our hands to make a real change of course in the AIDS epidemic with PrEP.
Very quickly, Mark Guest-King, you went to the Global Forum for Men Who Have Sex with Men, who also have sponsored your tour to South Africa. Tell me what took place at that particular conference that focuses on gay men.
Well, because the Global Forum of Men Who Have Sex with Men focuses on the human rights and health of gay men throughout the world, what you have are men here who are coming to this conference under great personal peril. You know, they can be prosecuted at home not only for being gay, including the death penalty in places like Egypt, but for even providing services, HIV services, to communities at risk that include gay men. So really, my takeaway from the MSMGF conference is always a great sense of gratitude over my situation at home and inspiration that it doesn't matter where you live and how you may be discriminated against, the good work of people often rises to the top.
Mark Guest-King, always inspirational to speak with you. Thank you very much for joining us on The Informer this evening.
Thank you so much, Dean, and my best to you.
Mark Guest-King comes to us with thanks to the MSMGF Forum, and also you can follow his work at marksking.com. Up next, we'll speak to Brent Allen, who is also in South Africa. Brent Allen is the Executive Director of Living Positive Victoria. His role at AIDS 2016 is somewhat different to the one he had here in Melbourne 2 years ago. Brent, welcome.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here with you in Durban.
What is it like for you to have a bit of a backseat this time around?
Fantastic. You know, this conference has been so amazing to watch what's going on around the world. I mean, not necessarily the best situation, but to actually go to sessions this time has been great. Amazing.
Just following some of the correspondence that's been coming out of AIDS 2016, I can't help but feel very grateful that we had AIDS 2014 here in Melbourne, because it certainly catapulted this country much further ahead in the AIDS response.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the star attractions actually has been the effort we did in Victoria to repeal Section 19A. It's been highlighted again and again as a model of best practice. There's people from Argentina, Paraguay, Brazil, all who are interested in following the lead in their own countries.
The issue of criminalization has been centre front at AIDS 2016 and highlights some of the issues that countries less fortunate than ours still have, and even some first world countries.
Absolutely. I mean, I was recently talking to a young woman from California who was explaining to me what happens in their state if you don't disclose, you know, the notion that in the U.S. military, you can be imprisoned in a military jail if you're in the military in the United States and don't disclose.
One of the, sad things from my perspective, just looking in, is that many of these issues have been on conference agendas year in, year out? When are we going to see some of these things like women and girls, like sex workers, like injecting drug users actually fall off the radar because the problem is no longer there?
It's a very interesting question. You know, so many advances have been made in the science, in cure, vaccine, but one of the things we know is that without a change to human rights, without the involvement of people profoundly affected by this disease, it doesn't matter how far science takes us.
Yeah, well, what is it that you're taking from AIDS 2016 and going to bring back here to Melbourne?
Look, there's a really good discussion going on around PrEP activism in first world nations. There's still a lot to do about informing, you know, profoundly affected communities, sex workers, injection drug users, like you said. But I think one of the really telling things is that we can't let it slide. What we're doing with gay men is so important. Our epidemic is unique in Australia. You know, it's very homogeneous. It's profoundly centered around gay men. And we can't lose track of the advances we've made around supporting gay men.
And can that be modelled for countries elsewhere?
Yes and no. I mean, there are a lot of countries that have a similar-ish type of epidemic. But what we're seeing here and what we're seeing in this sort of conference in South Africa is the absolute marginalization of what I've often called the icky people. You know, they don't get a place on the stage. They don't have a voice. And that includes gay men.
It has been said that the issue regarding men who have sex with men has fallen off the international agenda, and that's why things like the pre-conference take place, the MSMGF pre-conference. What is it like to be in South Africa where the issue regarding gay men and HIV is not the one that's centre front?
Well, it's interesting. You know, you feel very privileged about the access to treatments we have, the access to basic, you know, food, shelter, clothing, compared to what you hear from some countries. One of the things we've had here at the Global Village is the Disclosure Sofa, a project with Living Positive Victoria and ACON, and the stories we've been recording from advocates and people living with HIV around the world is amazing. It makes you think, wow, you know, I think I have it hard as a gay man living with HIV. It's nothing compared to some of the other stories we're hearing.
And Brent, closer to home, countries like New Zealand and UK, who's a very wealthy country like ours, they're still having issues around PrEP.
Yeah, you know, PrEP is an expensive drug, is what we're hearing. That it needs to be rolled out first to people living with HIV. I mean, as treatment, as prevention, and we all agree that that's important. But you know, if we're really going to get on top of this disease, you know, we have to start minimizing faster the number of new infections every year. And PrEP is a way to do that.
Now, every time there's one of these conferences, there's some big names that pushed forward and become centre front. Who is on the agenda for AIDS 2016? Have you got any word regarding the big names that will be speaking?
Well, at the moment, I'm standing outside a session where Prince Harry is about to leave. We're going to have a meeting with him and some of the youth advocates from around the world. And he'll be taking stage with Elton John at about 1 o'clock today.
Well, I should let you go and let you get back to it. Thank you very much for taking the time out to speak to The Informer tonight.
Thank you, Dean. Take care. Bye-bye.
That's Brent Allen, Executive Director of Living Positive Victoria, joining us from Durban, South Africa at AIDS 2016. Ruby Susan takes us to the USA next.
You're listening to The Informer. I'm Ruby Susan, and I'm joined by Noah Mickelson, Executive Editor of Huffington Post Queer Voices. Thanks for joining us again, Noah.
My pleasure. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. All the better for having a chance to chat with you. Now, I thought to kick it off, a few weeks ago, US whistleblower Chelsea Manning had been in the headlines for her team not being able to contact her while she is serving her 35-year sentence. Would you be able to shed some light on that?
They're still appealing it. They're saying that, you know, no whistleblower. So she was convicted, you know, for part of the WikiLeaks thing where she charged her with treason, basically.
Yeah.
But they're saying that no one's ever been given this harsh of a sentence. But recently, it did come to light that she tried to commit suicide, and that was confirmed. But I think that she's doing okay. She's still writing. She's still actually tweeting. She gives her tweets over the phone to a communications firm, and then they tweet for her. You know, prison is a very hard place for anybody, but it's also, I think, especially hard, maybe not especially, but it's very hard for someone who's trans, too, and trying to live in that environment. So she's under tremendous pressure and tremendous stress. But she actually just recently also published a blog on the Huffington Post about how she wants to be known for other things than being this whistleblower.
For her boring parts as well.
Yeah, the boring parts, exactly. Yeah, you know, she's saying there's all these other parts of me that no one talks about. And of course, when you do something that makes you infamous, that's all people want to talk about. But she's saying, you know, I have all these other parts too, and I wish people could just see sort of the boring parts of me. So a very human blog post from her.
Now, what else has happened? I'm not fully up to date, but I do know that there was a shadowy Trump emerging with several smoke machines to We Are the Champions. This was the Republican conference, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's going on right now. So it's happening in Cleveland, Ohio, and it's when all the Republicans...
It's still going. Oh, I thought it was just for a day.
Yeah. It'll be over today. Tonight's the last night. But he came out onto the stage in this huge puff of smoke, and they played Queen's We Are the Champions, which, as you know, it's so ironic because Freddie Mercury, who is the lead singer in Queen, was a queer man who died of HIV.
Yep.
So for them to choose that song by that person, you know, the way that we spun it on our site was that he'd be rolling over in his grave, and he would be. But this is not the first time that Trump has done this. He tried to use an Adele song before. He used an Aerosmith song. And every single time he uses a song, the artist always immediately comes out and says, we didn't say you could use that, and we want nothing to do with you. So this is just the latest in a long line of really angry people. Because Queen, the rest of Queen, who's still alive, they're very upset about it as well.
I was going to ask, is there a member of Freddie's estate that would be acting on his behalf to follow this up? But of course, the rest of the band must be there making themselves quite clear about that.
Yeah, they are. They're saying that they didn't approve it and they want to be disassociated from anything having to do with his quote-unquote unsavory campaign. So it's good. We need to speak out when this kind of stuff happens and say, no, we don't support you. You don't represent us.
Now, can I ask, how is the Republican platform looking heading into the general election in November?
They're absolutely out of their mind. I think the scariest thing for me, Ruby, is that now it's not even all this crazy stuff that they want or all the crazy things that Trump is saying. It's the idea that there are maybe millions of people in this country, in America, who will vote for Trump no matter what he says. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's not an election anymore where people get up on stage and have smart ideas and they debate how they see the future of our country. Now it's just, they can say anything they want and people will still vote for him. And that is absolutely terrifying to me.
Didn't he say at one point quite infamously, I could go out and shoot somebody on the street and I wouldn't lose a vote?
Yes. He did, and he's not. He's absolutely right, and that's just terrifying.
I think over here we're still kind of hoping that at one point the United States is going to be like, we're just kidding, it's fine, we wouldn't do this.
100%, but it's a reality, and I think part of the problem with that, too, is that a lot of people are getting complacent, and they're thinking, this can't happen, this won't happen. Same thing that happened in England with Brexit, you know?
Yep.
So many people just thought this will never happen. Even people who said, oh, I voted for it because I thought it wouldn't happen. So I'm worried that we're going to wake up in November and a lot of people won't have voted or will have ignored their civic duty, and this man could be our president. And that is terrifying for us. It's also terrifying for the rest of the world.
Yeah, no, definitely. I have to admit, it's times like this where I do quite appreciate Australia's compulsory voting policy.
It's brilliant.
Now, finally, I have been reading some interesting news about Grindr.
Yeah, so Grindr was doing this thing. It was only in Los Angeles, and they were targeting a very specific population of Black men and Latino men, but they were offering free HIV testing kits. So people could get a coupon where they could go to a center and get a kit, or there's even a queer center in Los Angeles where they have a vending machine outside and you enter a code and it gives you a kit. And so a lot of people who just had never been tested or hadn't been tested in the last year were getting tested for the first time or the first time in recent memory. And it's really important. And a lot of people don't do it because there's so much stigma around HIV still.
Yep.
They're afraid to go talk to a doctor. So Grindr was providing a way for people to get these tests and to find out what their status was without any of that stigma. And I think that's super cool. I hope that they do more of that.
I'm hoping we'll see some more stuff roll out with Grindr. It has a pretty deep saturation in the queer market. I know I've seen it being used right across the world. So if they do, it's a very good platform to reach that particular audience.
I should say, I know Grindr is working on doing more kind of community outreach. So I totally agree. I think that they have such a great position and that they should be using it for good as well.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining us again, Noah. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, I'll talk to you next week.
And a big thanks to Ruby Susan for that one. Now, that is it for The Informer for tonight and for this week. But you can catch a podcast of the program available for download from Joy's website, joy.org.au/The Informer. And you can follow The Informer on Twitter at The Informer Joy. You can follow me at Dean Beck on air. And I'll catch you again next Wednesday. Until then, keep well, take care. Bye for now.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.